Hey, everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of Hey Man, It's Okay. I am Sky, your tour guide into mental health.
And I am Ryan, your licensed clinician. I'm a licensed psychotherapist out here in Newport Beach, California. And I kind of bring that up because we got a fellow colleague, I guess, or a fellow countryman from Orange County, a board certified orthodontist who has also been pretty adamant about wading into the waters of mental health, fitness, emotional fitness, mental fitness, physical fitness. Corey Corpodian.
Nailed it. There you go.
Save me.
Good
here.
Job.
Yeah. Corey Corpodian. Yeah. You got on the last one. Love it. Thank you. Yeah. I didn't know you were in Newport Beach. That's awesome.
Corey, tell us a little bit about kind of why you got into mental health, a little bit about your story. You seem young, even for an orthodontist, you seem young, and especially somebody who's already had multiple pivots in his career.
Yeah, so I like to think that I'm still young, but I'm getting up there. I'll be 40 next year. And it is interesting. I had a very fast trajectory through school. I grew up like a lot of people who want to accomplish a lot in their life. And I was given a blueprint. And that blueprint from my family was, you know, in order to be successful, you got to be a doctor or a lawyer. I mean, most people hear the blueprint for success. It says something along the lines of go to school, get a degree, get a good job, work hard, retire, then enjoy life. And for me, that meant going to become an orthodontist. I actually graduated high school as valedictorian when I was 16 years old, did college in 3 years, went on to NYU Dental School, which is 4 years, and then orthodontic residency for 3 more. So I did graduate at a young age, at 26, which is, you know, about 5 years younger than pretty much everybody else in my class, and for residency. And so I've had the opportunity to get, I guess, work really hard and try and accomplish a lot of things. But what happened was, is that I, you know, going through dental school is tough. There's no doubt about it. It's a lot of hard work. I didn't understand if I wanted to quit because it was hard or if I didn't really want to do it. But I'm not a quitter. I never have been. It's not ingrained in me. And so I just kept pushing through. Of course, I did really well enough to be able to become an orthodontist and get into residency. But I came out of residency, I started working, and I was just horribly depressed. I was suffering. You know, here I am. Everybody's like, wow, you know, you're so successful. They're talking to me about how successful I was on paper, right? I had all these degrees. And how happy I should be because I was living in Newport Beach. But they didn't know it was at the time I was living in my parents' house and, you know, I was making money, but I owed so much to the student loans. And, you know, it just didn't seem like the dream that I had envisioned. And so I was like, this can't be everything that life's about. And while I was trying to figure out what the answer to my life was, and I was working full time, I was driving to San Diego and driving to LA, and I was living in Newport Beach, and I was kind of working for these different corporations, for these dental offices as an orthodontist, I started getting into physical fitness. And I bring that up because it's kind of how my journey shifted from being an orthodontist only to turning into an entrepreneur and really discovering what I call emotional fitness, which I'll get into in a sec. And the idea was that I was working out, and working out made me feel better. I was like, oh, this feels good. You know, like a lot of people, I started feeling better. And I don't know, I'm really goal driven. So I was like, maybe I'll jump into a bodybuilding competition. Just take it all the way. And so I did.
Why not? Just dive in.
Yeah. I've been working out my whole life playing sports. And I was like, let's see how far I can take my body. And that's just kind of my personality. And so I did it for 3 months. I won my first competition. And then it was the California State Championships. I placed second. Then I went to nationals or junior nationals in Las Vegas to try and get my pro card. This is many years ago, like 2014, maybe. And so I'm going to get my pro card. I get first call outs. I'm really excited. I don't get my pro card, you know, failure. But I talked to my coach and he's, look, man, we're going to get you dialed in. We'll go to the next national. There's only 6 national competitions to get your pro card at the time. We'll go to the next one in 2 months. I'm like, great. So in the meantime, I'm working out still. I go to my doctor because I've been paying for this health insurance for a year. Like, I better use it, go to the dermatologist. I got, you know, I took anatomy. I kind of know things are changing. I got this little tiny mole, no bigger than the size of my pinky nail. And not even my pinky nail, it's smaller than that. And It's all on the side of my chest. And the dermatologist said, we need to take a biopsy. I'm like, yeah, okay, sure. Calls me up a week later. Hey, come in. We need to cut it out. They draw this big circle around my entire chest. And I'm like, that's a little bit bigger. So you've got melanoma. And I was like, I don't know how I missed that in this conversation. And melanoma is the most aggressive form of skin cancer. And even though intellectually I knew that, I was like, wait, I'm going for my pro card, right? Remember, I'm unhappy. I'm depressed. I'm trying to figure out life. I've been working my butt off for the last 10 years to get to school. And, you know, I'm just trying to make my way. And I'm like, oh, my pro card, this is something I'm working. This is a goal. Like, if you wait 6 months, you could lose half your chest. If you wait a year, you might not even be here. And that's how serious it was.
Yikes.
And so for me, I call that my memento mori, which means, you know, remember that one day you will die. And you'd think I would have changed everything right there, but it really kind of sent me further into depression. And it took, you know, and I don't always share that part of the story. I wanted your listeners to know it's not always like that immediate, oh, I snapped out of it. And then everything in life got better. But I had this gnawing question in the back of my mind that was like, I just can't keep living like this. And I felt like that disease was part of this toxic life that I was living. And I was so depressed. I was like, I've got to start searching for answers. Didn't know where it was going to come, but I started a journey of searching for different answers, looking for different things. I started reading books on psychology, books on, you know, Tony Robbins books. I went to a seminar for Tony Robbins. Actually, I don't even know if I read his book before I went to a seminar. I was like, I told you the story about going all in for physical fitness. I went all in for self-help. I read like 100 books in that first year. I mean, I was just feverishly reading through books, Audible, click, click, boom. And then I went to a seminar. If you know anything about Tony Robbins, it's super interesting. He's got all these different seminars. First of all, I only heard about Tony Robbins because of my dad. I never picked up a personal development book in my life. My dad told me about him one time because my dad was in sales his whole life, had a couple companies up and down. And he was like, oh yeah, this guy's a great motivational speaker. And I was like, is this guy even still alive? Is he still doing this stuff? Sure enough, he was. And I actually went to his event called Date with Destiny. I walk in. And I'd never been to a single personal development event in my life. At this point, I'm still only reading books and people are jumping up and down in music.
Right.
And I'm just like, oh my God, I just flew across the country to Florida. I spent like $5,000 because I'm so desperate for whatever answer this guy's going to give me that. And I'm like, I'm with a bunch of kooks, man. They're like, oh, this is crazy. But I spent all this money and at the time I didn't have a lot. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, all right, I'm going to give it this first day. So I'm sitting in this seminar and about 45 minutes in, Tony Robbins says a quote that will forever stick with me. He said, success without fulfillment is the ultimate failure. I said, huh, all right, this guy clearly knows something. Because that's exactly what I was super successful and I had no fulfillment and I felt like my life was a complete failure. And it fell apart a lot in a lot of ways because my family was what I always leaned on as I was growing up. And my family dynamics, my parents separated, ended up getting divorced. And that kind of put this strain on our family. So they no longer could support on that. So I had to lean in internally and I didn't have the support structure. So I had to rebuild myself. And I felt like everything had kind of failed to this point. So I finished this event. I spent 6 months working on myself, doing mental and physical exercises that changed the way I thought. The way I look at it is I rewired the way I think in my brain. And I didn't call it emotional fitness at the time. But after in 6 months, you know, bought my dream beach house in Newport Beach, I doubled my income while working less. And at the very tail end of that 6 months, I met the most amazing woman who's now, we've been together over 10 years. She's my wife. We've got two kids together. And I felt, wow, everything changed. So of course, people start asking me, Corey, how'd you do it? I read this book. I read that book, Corey. What else did you do? I went to the seminar. Corey, I went to those seminars too. I was like, but did you do this? Did you do that? I'd done everything you've done. What's the difference? What's your secret sauce? And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I don't know. At the beginning, I'm like, what is it? And I realized that I took the same approach that I did to school, sports, physical fitness, I took it to mental and emotional fitness. And I started practicing these exercises every single day. And just like going to the gym, if I work out for 6 months, am I fit for life? No. If I work out for every day for 6 years, yeah, I'm going to be a lot stronger. But if I stop working and don't work out for 6 months, I'm going to lose it. It's the same thing with our mental and emotional fitness. The mind is a muscle. I started practicing this. The more I practice it, the better I got. And until it, all of a sudden, changing the way you feel in a moment starts off, it's really hard, takes a lot of energy. There's a lot of investment of time, but then it becomes a habit. You wake up and you just do it without thinking about it. Just like some people get up, they go for a run, they're running before they even think about it. These certain habits, we all have habits, whether they're good or bad, you just want to get the good ones in there and build on them. And over time, and there's way more depth to it we can get into, but about beliefs and your identity and how that changes how you even think and will you ask questions. But over time, you can build those habits and to become this new, entirely new person. I mean, people, you know, people who knew me before and after, they didn't recognize me. And that's when, that's when emotion was born.
Did that separate you from people? Did that make you see people in your life who didn't necessarily need to be there?
Oh, absolutely.
A lot clearer?
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, I mean, that's just part of life where as you grow and expand, if people aren't, not that they're bad people. I tell people this all the time. Not that they're bad people. It's just that if they're not willing to grow with you, unfortunately, they're going to end up holding you back. And sometimes it's family. You know, they don't want to see you go after your goals and put yourself out there in a place that you might get hurt. So they say, hey, you know, be careful. And are you sure you want to do that? And they're trying to do it to protect you sometimes. Other times it's just people that, you know, their life is a different trajectory and that's okay. It's just not going to suit your needs going forward. And I've had great friends, people come in and out of my life, but unfortunately, as you continue to grow, if people aren't willing to grow with you, they're only going to hold you back. And you know, one thing too, I get this a lot when I talk to different people, right? Different, even entrepreneurs, is that people see them still in that old light. So they put them in that box and then people have a harder time getting out and changing.
It's going to piss a lot of people off, but I love Tony Robbins because a lot of people in the psychology field, because he's not technically licensed or doesn't have a degree. I mean, the amount of times I would hear him poo-pooed on in grad school was too many to count, but love that he made such, well, in that moment, kind of made such an impact in your life. One of my favorite quotes from his is, we don't experience life. We experience the life we focus on. But tell us a little bit about what your kind of way of thinking was before that and after that. Was it your perspective? Was it a story you were telling yourself? Was it limiting beliefs? Yep. What was it that was keeping you sort of in that tunnel vision of depression that might have opened up happiness and optimism and hope?
Yeah, it was all of that. You know, you hit it on the head. And one thing I'd say about, you know, people who, and I didn't just do Tony Robbins events. After his event, I went to Landmark and, you know, just other personal development events. Any speaker was doing something, I would go listen to them because I believed I could learn at least one thing from them. I will say, I do think Tony Robbins is the best at what he does. And it's pretty incredible. I'm a results-driven guy. So I'm not going to say that, you know, and he's got stuff now that studies will show that it works for him, but the results were there, right? The proof was in the pudding. So I'm, you know, if you want results, I'd say go to that guy. But sorry, back to your question. The mindset that I had before I look back, it was just awful. I mean, the story that I told myself was that, you know, I'd worked all this way, you know, people thought I would take wheelbarrows of money to the bank and I was just barely being able to survive. I was working way harder than I thought after years and years of sacrificing for school. You know, it was supposed to be so easy. You just walk in, get a job. I mean, the idea was like you put a shingle up and people just bring all their kids to you. And I got patients telling me, oh, I probably paid for your boat, got with my three kids. Ha ha. And I'm like, dude, I like barely paid the electrical bills. And they didn't understand that I had this mountain of debt, $850,000 when I graduated, actually ballooned up to over $1 million from student loans, you know? And so there's these things and I, you know, like I second guessed my decisions. Why did I do this? Was this really what I wanted? Which didn't help me because I was already there. You know, you dig yourself a hole, you know, the way out is not to sit there and, you know, mull over your feelings. It's to build a ladder and walk yourself out. And so my mindset was I had a poor story that I constantly told myself. And I mean, when I said I am depressed, I told myself repeatedly that I am depressed. Something bad would happen. And, you know, something really bad would happen, like finding out you get skin cancer and, oh God, of course I have skin cancer. Like, how am I not healthy? I'm this super, super physically fit and I'm sick. And, you know, I'm even more depressed. Everything was bad. I'm depressed. Somebody would not do something I want them to do. Oh, man, like, why am I, like, why won't people care for me? Like, they don't love me, or blah, blah, blah. It was honestly just a really shitty mentality. And then, of course, limiting beliefs that I'm depressed and that, you know, maybe I have something wrong with me and that. And I was always afraid of getting clinically diagnosed because of like this insurance thing. And I just didn't like the doctor idea. But I mean, it was really bad for a moment there. And so I didn't even get help professionally because I was afraid of hearing it out loud and the permanence of it. But
sure.
I said, I am depressed to myself so many times that it was, I mean, the idea of waking up depressed to me seems so crazy right now, but I'd wake up and just be like, I'm depressed. Who wakes up going, I'm depressed after you just slept for 8 hours? And I did that. So I had limiting beliefs that I couldn't change. That this is just the way I am. This is just my life. These are the decisions I made and I got to deal with it. And so how the mindset after that, you know, Carol Dweck has a great book about mindset, where growth versus fixed mindset. And so you look at my mindset was very fixed. There was only, this was the way I had to perform. This is what my life was, versus a growth mindset where I could all of a sudden I could learn and grow and change. And so now, instead of seeing roadblocks, I saw opportunity. And emotional fitness for me is like a GPS system. So if I have a goal, I'm trying to accomplish it. I want to get better. I want to have a better mental state. All right, how do I get there? What are the steps that I take? In a GPS system, you plug that in your phone. It's going to show you a route to get you there. Some routes might take 20 minutes. Some may take an hour. Some might have a toll road and some might, you know, have construction. Sometimes you're driving down the road and all of a sudden there's a block and there's a barrier. Does the GPS system say, oh, sorry, go home. You can't accomplish your goal. You can't get to your destination. No, it reroutes you. And that's for me what emotional fitness does. I hit a roadblock. I reroute to success. I reroute to my goal. And so my mindset shifted from one of not just scarcity, but really of lack of opportunity to the point where I said, you know what? There's always a way to accomplish my goal. There's always something I can do. I believe that if you have a problem, whether it's depression, anxiety, fear, worry, the cure is action, right? Most people are sitting there in their own head in distraction. They're on their phone, on Netflix, on social media. But if you just took more action and then measured the result, you'd figure out, okay, you know, I'm sad and depressed because nobody loves me. All right, if I just started asking every girl that I saw on the street if she would go out with me, sure, I'd get rejected a lot, but eventually somebody might say yes. Or I'd get really good at handling rejection. So when I finally do meet the person of my dreams, I could actually ask them out. There's so many times that if you just took massive action, if you just did whatever you were worried about, it would change your entire life. And that's the person I became.
I'm such a firm believer in action follows mood.
And love that too. I think that, you know, it's...
Or I'm sorry, mood follows action.
Yeah, yeah, no. Uh-huh. And I think that some people might be listening to this going, yeah, but I don't feel like doing that. Or, you know, I can't get myself out of this mental state. I can't even get out of bed. And sometimes I have this little mantra that I'll, you know, sometimes post to social media where it just says 3, 2, 1, go. And instead of thinking about what you need to do, how you need to do it, overthinking yourself into basically inaction, 3, 2, 1, go. Wake up in the morning. You got to do something. 3, 2, 1, go. Don't think about it. Just get out of bed. By the time you realize what's happening, you're putting your shoes on. And for me, I like to get to the gym right away because if my body's moving, if my blood's pumping, I'm going to be in 15 minutes, I'm going to be in a better mental state. And then from that mental state, I'm going to make better decisions. I ask better questions. I plan my day better. And so for me, that's what it is. 3, 2, 1, go. You create this habit. It'll be tough at first, but just force yourself to go. And as you create that habit, now all of a sudden, you're moving. And by the time you think, oh man, I don't want to go to the gym today, you're already there.
Yeah, it's definitely sort of out of my scope of practice, as they say here. But man, if there's one thing I try to get every one of my clients to do, it's to get in the gym, get some exercise, get that blood flowing. I mean, it is hard, I think, to be truly depressed and still have a 5-day-a-week workout or exercise routine. But you know, one of the other things I love that you said is continuing to work around the hurdles or not stopping once, you know, there's a block there. And I think for a lot of us, we will give something a shot. You know, let's say it's even the gym, you know, we'll give it a shot for 6 months, injure ourselves. There's a block. You know, and then those same limiting beliefs come back.
Mm-hmm.
I knew this wasn't for me. Yeah. I knew I wasn't cut out for this. And our confirmation bias for our low self-esteem identity kind of really takes hold and kicks in. So I don't know. So what are some of the ways that you might be able to rework that perspective or change that narrative after hitting a hurdle?
Man, that's such a great question. Actually, in my book, Emotional Fitness, I interview a gentleman whose story is just, it's so crazy. I would never have believed it if I didn't hear it from his own mouth. It's just, it's a story of constant reinventing and finding new ways to overcome these hurdles. So he starts off where he gets picked on and bullied. I'm gonna give the very abbreviated story, but he starts off getting picked on and bullied in school. Right. So he's got this mental, you know, issue where he doesn't have confidence. And, you know, as he grows up, he decides to go into martial arts to gain strength and confidence. And now he's this big guy, and, you know, he's got a black belt and he's strong. And he's walking down the street of a university, I think out of a lab, but he's working or something, and gets hit over the head by this guy who was trying to steal some drugs from this laboratory or something like that. And so here he is, he's super strong and can defend himself, but now he gets taken down by this guy from behind and he loses that, right? And then he tries to gain that back, but he's struggling, and he finds that yoga is this great way and breath work is this amazing way to change how he feels about himself. And he kind of reinvents his own way to do it. So, you know, at one point, somebody who's working out who can't work out, right? Is there something else you can do, like yoga or breath work or meditation or journaling, that might be able to change something? His story gets even crazier as he goes and buys a brand or a used car, but a new car for him. So he goes to buy a car, it's a used truck. And as he's driving down the freeway, and this is before most people had cell phones, like every now, maybe a couple of people had, the tire goes flying off into the distance. Car flips over, crashes. His son pulls him out and they flag somebody down. It's a nurse who happens to have a cell phone. And this is, in the 90s, so very lucky. But from this, he becomes a paraplegic. And he actually, now what he does is that he helps people. He's a therapist and he helps people work through people. And I talked to him. I remember talking to him about how he has this burning sensation running through his arms, this phantom pain that really never goes away. And he said to me one time during our conversation, so that when he's helping other people, the pain isn't there. And I thought, that's really interesting. I think for him, it was a realization in that moment too. That's probably why he does what he does, because he's completely dependent on other people to take care of him, to move him. But when he's helping other people, he found a way to get out of pain. And so his whole life is this crazy story of hitting a hurdle and then finding a way to get around that roadblock. And it's one of those stories where, you know, I mean, besides losing your life, you know, nobody's got something that's going to top this, right? If this guy can find a way to make his life meaningful and to figure out a way to keep moving forward and stay positive and keep doing what, you know, mentally, basically these emotional fitness exercises that he's done, anybody can do it. So somebody who wants to work out and move, what if he can't move? Can you breathe? If you're breathing, we both know breath is the way to get into the nervous system. You know, one of the craziest experiences I've had is just the Wim Hof ice bath experience, where I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to control my body temperature for 2 minutes and keep it so that I'm not freezing or hyperventilating, and the power of breath to control our nervous system. That was one thing, because I went through anatomy and I know, I'm like, nobody ever talked to me about this. And so there's always something else we can do. But you have to be willing to look for that and try it. And the thing is, people say, I tried everything. Most people have tried 1 to 3 things over and over again. And what's the definition of insanity? Trying things over and over again and expecting a different result, right? If you really tried everything, most people quit before they find what really works for them.
You sound like a super, super motivated guy. It sounds like once you set your mind to something, you're going to do it. and you're going to figure out how to accomplish it. What advice do you have for somebody who is just like stuck in their, you know, endless scroll loop and who isn't super motivated, because this world that we're in is built to keep us down. And you are obviously have found a way to break at least loose of that, if not free of that. And I'd just like to know, like, what keeps you so motivated and positive about it?
Yeah, I talk about using pain and pleasure as a driving motivational force. Pain, from a biological perspective, we're driven by pain or pleasure. We move away from pain, we move towards pleasure. I move away from death, I move towards life, right? You know, I'm hungry, but I'm not hungry enough to go fight this, you know, mountain lion for food. So I'm going to stay over here. All of a sudden, I'm starving to death. I'm going to do whatever it takes, right? So pain and pleasure drive us. I think, you know, people who are high achievers, they are going for more. They want more out of life. They've done a lot. They want to try and drive more. And those are people that I usually approach me like, hey, I want to grow. I want to do more. What can I do? Then there's people who are stuck at the bottom and go, oh man, Corey, I don't even know what to do. I'm stuck. I heard your story and I need help. I need to get out. I'm desperate for change. But the problem is the people in the middle. And, you know, mediocrity is where dreams go to die. Your comfort zone is, it sounds great in theory, but really it is where we all go to die. And I think the way that I like to try and get people to imagine what's going to happen is this. If you are in your comfort zone, you're doom scrolling, you're watching your favorite shows, sure, on a Sunday after you've worked your butt off all week, I like to watch some football, you want to hang out, you have earned it, you've worked hard, you deserve it, and you can do that. But if you do that every Sunday, now all of a sudden you're losing a day where you can get an edge. Or if you do that every day, I think the average person watches like 6 to 8 hours of screen time a day. And it's because of the phones, right? Like, obviously people are, you know, they're working while they're watching shows on their phone. And maybe that's screen time, not watching TV, but it's an insanely high number of hours that people are just consuming content. And what is the purpose of that content? It's to numb you, to entertain you, to make you forget what goal you should be going after, to make you take away time from your family, take away time from your body, to numb the pain, perhaps. Maybe you're not in a lot of pain because you're like, hey, you know what? I've got a pretty good job. I should be grateful. Everybody tells me I should be grateful for what I've got. You know, I'm in okay shape. I go for a run every now and then. Things are good. I've got good friends. I've got a good family. But the problem is, if you are stuck in that for a couple weeks, you don't notice it. But if you're stuck like that for a couple years, you're going to wake up. And excuse me for saying this, but you're going to be like, what the fuck happened in the last 5 years? I used to be somebody. I used to be an athlete. I used to be the top sales guy. I used to have all these things and these dreams and these goals. And where did it go? So what I do, and I've kind of done this from a young age, and this is just how I approach it, is that I use the pain of a future that doesn't exist yet. And I bring that right into me as if it's my reality right now. And that drives me. I wake up and go, if I don't do this right now in 5 years, I'm not going to like myself. If I don't change who I am right now, I might not, you know, for me back then when I was really depressed, I might not be here in 5 years from now. And I wanted to live. I wanted to survive. And so when I'm going after goals, if I got something, I'm like, if I want to start my podcast, if I don't do this in 5 years, I'm going to wish I had, I'm going to regret it. And I can't live with that regret. I make that pain of not doing something so real right now that it drives me to do it. And guess what? I talked about pain and pleasure. When I start doing it, when I start taking action, hey, it feels good. So now I want to do it more. So when I'm ever not motivated for something, I think about, oh man, what do I need to do? And I believe that people are so short-sighted these days. It's all these dopamine hits, right? It's Instagram scrolling and whatever social media it is nowadays, TikTok and all that stuff.
The instant generation, the 8 seconds of attention. Yeah.
It's crazy because you're sitting there, you're telling me 8 seconds? What? I see a drop off on my YouTube channel. If you don't hit them by 15 seconds and then 30 seconds and a minute, it's like they're just dropping off like flies. It's crazy because there's so much good content. There's so much good information that they could be learning, but they're just like, oh, I want to watch a cat play with yarn, or I watch this kid fall off a wall. It's creating that brain rot. People are like, their attention spans are bad, their intelligence is down. It's what kind of life are you living? And if you do that for 5 more years, you're going to look back and go, what happened to all my dreams and goals? I could have done something with my life.
And I think similar to kind of what you were saying before, if you tell yourself you're depressed, I feel like so much of our culture and our society, and understandably so, has given us this story, you know, like the American dream is dead. You're not going to be able to afford a house. And dating is more difficult than ever, especially, you know, the story for us guys, women only want, you know, a 6 foot tall, six figure, six pack. And it, so all of these stories that are kind of told to keep us down, it's hard to break through some of those things. And then once we have that story, then we're just further validated from a social media slot machine of validation. But yeah, and so I was thinking you get to work with people in probably their most formative ages. What is there anything that you've learned from them that you've been able to either put into your emotional fitness or any messages that you have for them as well?
You know, I think that the biggest thing is that every day we have a choice to be who we want to be. You know, sometimes people talk about finding themselves. I need to go find myself. I want to, you know, like somehow when we were born, it was lost at sea. You know, like I'm just looking to find out what I like and what my passions are. And I really believe you need to cultivate your passions. You need to create yourself. And especially if, you know, you're a young leader, a young man, you have so much opportunity to create yourself into whatever you want to be, but it takes discipline. It takes hard work. Most of the people I interview on my podcast talk about how hard they worked for 10 years before anybody knew their name. And, you know, it's tough nowadays because social media is, you're right. Like they say, oh, you need to be 6 feet tall. You need to make over $100,000. And like these podcasts that promote that, where I'm just thinking to myself, like that's 0.001% of the population. And I don't think women want that. I think what they want is confidence. I think what they want is somebody who can stand up for and speak their mind and do what they say they're going to do and commit, you know. And the problem is that we're women are also, you know, they're confused about what they want and what they should expect and even how they should be. And, you know, it's not everybody wants a strong, confident woman. I do, right? I want somebody who's going to be my equal in my life. And I'm very lucky to have found that. And so I think that when you look at what can you do today to create yourself, it starts with small daily habits and stay disciplined. We talked about going to the gym. There was a time in my life where, you know, everybody's got all about cold plunges nowadays. Those things are crazy. I think it was 8 years ago, maybe 9 years ago, I kind of fell into this whole Wim Hof idea. And I was like, okay, this guy's been able to change his body and, you know, control his body temperature. I was like, that's like next level stuff, man. I want to be able to do that. So for a year straight, at the end of every shower, I did a minute of ice cold water. That was unbearable at times. I'm not going to lie. There were times where I was like, this is going to suck.
And yeah, when it's cold outside.
Oh yeah. If I went to the mountains a couple of times and that water was definitely colder than Newport Beach. And I tell you this though, I wanted the physiological effects. And there's studies that talk about whether it's really good or not. And there are absolutely some good results from it, but maybe not touted as much as it was on social media. But the one thing that it absolutely teaches me or taught me was that if there's something hard and I've got to do it, I know that I can step under that water and I can sit there and I can breathe and I can take it and I can do it for a minute. And if I can do it for a minute, you'd be surprised. You can do it for 5 or 10. And you're sitting there and it's freezing and it sucks. But every day you showed up and you proved to yourself. I proved to myself that every day I can do it. And I'm, you know, I love doing stuff like this, but that was just such an easy thing that everybody can do because everybody's got a shower with cold water, turn it on for 30 seconds at the end, breathe through it. I will tell you, it does help to elongate your exhale. So the more you, as you breathe in and then you breathe on your breath out, slow, long exhales. Do tend to help me. Don't try to hold your breath. But that taught discipline and focus and to yourself proving it that, hey, I can do this. Anytime somebody says, do you want to jump in the ocean? I'm like, no, it's cold. It's 55 degrees. Maybe a little warmer right now, but you know, sometimes it'll be 55 degrees. I'm like, I don't want to do it. Come on, it'll be fun. I'm like, damn it. I said, I don't want to do it. Now I have to do it because this fear is popping up again. Even now, sometimes there's stuff you don't want to do. Whenever it's because I like don't want to do it because I don't want to feel uncomfortable. You built this muscle up. You're like, all right, I'm going to do it because it is uncomfortable.
Because it's only in the uncomfortable that we grow.
Exactly. Exactly. And the thing is, talking about that scrolling and you're in the middle, you're not really, I want to change. I don't need to change my life. Life's changing all around you all the time. If you don't think you're changing, guess what? Everything around you is changing. And eventually you'll wake up one morning and realize if you didn't change with it, if you didn't grow with it, you got left behind.
What are some things that you're continuing to work on that are challenging yourself? I mean, somebody as driven as you, that's accomplished so much already at such a young age. By the way, I saw that you were on Tom Bilyeu's podcast, something like 6 years ago, which is so cool. I mean, achieving something like that long ago, what still challenges you today, keeps you going? It is sort of almost like you're the second minute of the Wim Hof cold plunge.
You know, for me, a lot of it is I've got two young kids, 2.5 and 6 months old right now, and I've got some pretty big ambitions with some other businesses in the dental marketing space that we're currently working on that, if that takes off, it kind of, for me, it was this. I'll tell you a quick story. I accomplished everything, all those goals, bought that beach house, and I woke up and got the keys to the house. And I stood on top of the deck and I tried calling my girlfriend, who's now my wife at the time. She didn't answer. I tried calling my mom, didn't answer. Tried calling my dad, didn't answer. Tried calling my two sisters and they didn't answer. And so I'm sitting on top of this deck. I got this peekaboo view of the ocean and I'm like, okay, so I just accomplished like the biggest goal I'd ever set out to accomplish at a very young age. And I had nobody to share it with. And I felt kind of empty inside. And I think, it's so hard to know that. Like I used to always joke, nobody's ever crying in a Ferrari, right? But here I was having accomplished that goal, not having anybody to share it with, and realizing that unless I'm able to share my success with the people I care about, it's not meaningful to me. It doesn't fill up my cup, doesn't give me purpose. And that moment kind of shaped the trajectory of my life where I've got to take care of myself, then my family. And so right now, it's not just about creating a secure financial life for myself, but for all the future generations around me. It's just kind of like a work in progress always, and making sure my kids are set up and then being able to help, others around us. And by doing stuff like this on podcasts, for me, I look at what the next 5 to 10 years might look like. And I say, okay, I've always thought the world needs better leaders and needs more leaders. Emotional fitness since COVID, or I should say mental health illness since COVID, has exploded. And it's worse than ever. I actually think it's worse than the statistics show. They show about the increase in prevalence. But the problem is that everybody knows they've got a problem and they can't fix it. I've got anxiety. I'm worried, I'm taking this pill, it's not helping, I'm going to therapy, it's not helping. Or they think it helps for a little bit, and then they fall off a cliff. I think there's something missing in the solutions that have been brought, or the mental, like the culture around mental health, right? Where it's, oh, I've got this illness, so now you know why I'm the way I am. Well, no, if I've got anxiety, like I told you guys, I think action is the cure. I mean, granted, there's a lot of other stuff to it, but go take some action. Let's do something about it. Let's solve the problem. Let's not perpetuate it. And so for me, I want to build better leaders who are more emotionally fit, because when I'm long gone, somebody's got to take over and my kids have to grow up in this world. And I don't want them. I don't know how you get even worse on the mental health scale, but I don't want, my kids to have to experience mental health illnesses, things that I had to experience. I obviously want the world to be better for them. And I believe because of the fact that I was, lucky enough to find podcasting at a young age and be able to communicate powerfully to people and help founders and entrepreneurs and leaders spread their message, I feel that, it's my job to do it. Because at the end of the day, and this is what I always tell people, is if it was just me and I'm taking care of myself, what's it all for? I'm going to go to the graveyard with all my treasure and bury it with me? I can't take it with me, right? So what am I leaving behind? And I think you only get to that point in life if you've actually accomplished large goals you've set for yourself, because the truth is, if somebody's listening to this, they're like, yeah, that sounds great, man. I'm still trying to break 100K. I'm still trying to, you know, stop living paycheck to paycheck. Bro, I get it. I've been there. But you got to work really hard. And when you do accomplish it, then you'll realize, okay, there's more to life. And what is that? Once you stop working to survive, you're going to find out like there are a lot more things that you need to do in this world. And really, for me, that's my true purpose.
Yeah, I think I completely agree with, there's something off about the way we're handling mental health, whether that's the culture, the field, because people have more access than ever before. I think there's more therapists than ever before. We're more informed about mental health than ever before. There's more books, there's more podcasts. And yet, you know, I mean, I do think in some ways, especially with, you know, some of these great podcasts that are out there, those really do help people who wouldn't have maybe a father figure or a great mentor in their life, somebody who can talk and share some of these ideas that have helped them, you know, just like you. But yeah, there's something that needs to change. I have, you know, some theories. I think the way we talk about it, social media in general, it's often, you know, can scapegoat problems, and we can seem more maybe oppressed by our issues, which reduces the agency that I think we really should be instilling in people. One of my favorite, I think he's like Stanford's chief of psychiatry, puts his two pillars of mental health, gratitude and agency. And both are beliefs, right? Like we can have both of those things, whether we're in prison or whether we have $1 billion. And I've seen people with extreme net worths have zero agency and zero gratitude. And I've seen people in some of the worst situations still have a little bit of agency and some gratitude and still feel pretty good about themselves. So we're getting close kind of to the end of this. In sort of shape, in that idea of helping create new leaders, what are some things that you can encourage people either to become leaders themselves, leaders in their own lives, leaders of their families, of their businesses, or just even their own mental health?
I think it all starts with you. I think it all starts with each individual. And I'm not saying that everybody needs to be the leader of their, they don't have to be the mayor of their city or the governor of the state, right? You know, it's not like that, but you need to lead yourself first. You have to set goals. You have to design your life in a way that you want to envision and something that would drive you, right? So lead yourself. And as you lead yourself, you become an example for the people around you, especially as young fathers, young men, entrepreneurs, leaders. You know, if you're leading, whether it's leading your family, your sales team, your business, like these people watch what you do, they look up to you, and they're going to follow your lead. They're not always going to do what you tell them to do, but they're going to, if you do everything you say you're doing, they're going to watch that. They're going to follow that. They're going to imitate that. And if they don't, you know, and you've had good conversations with them, maybe they're not right for your team. It's interesting. You talk about just like how we handle the mental health illnesses and what's going on. And I think there's a difference between knowing information, because everybody knows how to save money, yet people are in credit card debt. Everybody knows how to lose weight. I can't open up a social media app without getting a fitness post. There's so much information. And to your point, now, mental health illness, there's so much information, magazines, posts, free information on blogs, podcasts, YouTube, everywhere. What's the disconnect? I think it's that integration. I think people listen to something, they think about it, they say, oh, yeah, that works, right? And they try it in their head one time. And what I've always talked about with emotional fitness is you've got to integrate the physiology. You've got to become physically active with it. There's a thing called anchoring, which is a neuro-linguistic programming technique. And I really actually believe it. I think we anchor things all the time in our body. And the idea is this, that, you know, something bad happens, like, you know, maybe you've got anxiety. You always feel it in your chest. And you're like, oh, like this weight on your chest. What if I could take that weight? You're weighed down by all your anxiety. What if I could take that weight? And what if we just put it in a suitcase and put it off to the side? Just let you breathe for a second, right? And there's all these different techniques, but I think you have to engage those physiological techniques to rewire your brain, because our mind and bodies are connected. and people are hearing things, trying things from an intellectual standpoint, but they're not doing it. They're not taking action. And it's, you know, people talk about like investing in different types of whatever, real estate. And, you know, until you invest in real estate, you actually don't know what it's like to invest in real estate. Oh, I wish I could own a home, right? If you've ever owned a home, then you know that when you have tenants, you can have problems. And then who's going to fix the toilet when it breaks? And what's going to be in, like, all of a sudden you're getting texts and calls. Like, do you really want to own real estate? Or you just want the idea of it, right? Until you do it, that's the only way to know what's going to actually happen. I think the disconnect sometimes comes from so many people knowing what to do and not actually following through with doing it all the way, right? So they don't ever get the experience of what is supposed to happen. And they just have this idea, kind of running in circles here, but it's just this idea of, I've got this problem. I've tried this. I tried the medication. It didn't work. And it's almost like this limiting belief they put on themselves. Like, it doesn't work. We need to give them a solid dose of the placebo effect so they can change their mindset.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Well, yeah, this conversation went by way quicker than I expected it to. I can't believe we're already here at the end, because you are such a wealth of information.
Oh, thank you. I mean, talking to both of you guys, I was like, oh man, you know, got a lot of history, a lot of knowledge, you know, and this is about mental health illness, you know, and I believe in what I know very strongly. I've read a lot of books, but sometimes, you know, it's like, I'm not always up to par on all the statistics and the numbers necessarily, but I believe in results and getting action or taking action to get those results. So I'm very passionate about it. So I really appreciate you guys having me on the show.
Thank you so much, Corey. Yeah, it was an absolute pleasure. I'm definitely going to get your book. Tell people a little bit about, you've got so many things going on. Tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, for sure. You can go to masteremotionalfitness.com and that'll take you to Amazon, where you have Amazon and Audible. And then also you go to YouTube at Corey Corpodian. Any kind of free challenges and stuff we'll throw on, I could send this link to you just through standstore.com/CoreyCorpodian. So that'll kind of have some different freebies that we give away and stuff to learn more information about emotional fitness, different like daily exercises you might be able to do to kind of help you through the process.
Awesome. Great. Yeah. Thanks so much, Corey, for coming on the show today and for just having a conversation. This is really cool.
Yeah. My pleasure. Thanks guys for having me.
Yeah. Thank you. Lastly, I'm going to throw one more thing out there. I always kind of do this, but I really appreciate people in the medical field making mental health a priority, because I think we need much more of that, because the mind and the body are very connected. So anyways, thank you guys so much. Check us out. Sky, take us out.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Hey Man, It's Okay, everybody. Check out our website, heymanitsokay.com. And all social media is at Hey Man, It's Okay. And until next time, it's okay to not be okay. Thanks, everybody.
Peace.